Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And pain, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
That's right. No pain, no gain, they say.
Yeah. House of Pain.
Cards of Pain.
Yeah.
That's one of them.
But more specifically, The Future of Pain, which I think is a pretty jazzy title for a podcast. Makes me want to listen to it and find out what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and it turns out that the future of pain is both stark and there's some hope there as well.
And also kind of like the present and past of pain, which is humans figuring out how to make more of it and sometimes how to make less of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this whole like duality of pain is better than killing, right?
Well,
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have the choice to die or have pain inflicted on you, which would you choose?
Well, it's a matter of degree, right? I mean, if it's like a choice between death and an Indian burn, I'm probably going to go for the Indian burn. But
I don't know. My brother can inflict a mean Indian burn.
Is he still administering Indian burns?
Sometimes.
Oh.
But actually, I was thinking about this quote from Scientific American, and it says, pain is intimately tied to brain functions that govern behavior and decision-making, including expectation, attention, and learning. So it makes sense that we can experience pain, and we would alter our behavior to avoid it as much as possible. I mean, most of us would,
yeah.
Right?
It tends not, generally one does not argue in favor of pain when you're like stubbing your toe to death on the coffee table at like 3 a.m. But,
right.
Cause at that point you're kind of like, all right, I get it. I should not ram my little toe into the coffee table. And you know, and yes, the nail is not supposed to be halfway off now. You know, it's like it, you kind of reach this frustration point with your body where you just kind of like quit letting me know. Obviously this, you know, the pain signal is telling me I should not do this. I should correct this action.
Right.
Or that there's something broken with me. But, you know, after a while, you're kind of like, I got the memo. I'll, you know, write it on my hand. Stop giving me, you know, incessant pain.
That's right. I'll stop touching the hot stove unless I'm Bart Simpson, of course. So I think what this is getting to is that pain is actually really useful in learning how to, avoid it.
Yeah.
But also it's been really useful for a bunch of people. And I think what we're talking about today more specifically is government entities. And it's a way to, control crowds. And I'm thinking about the pain ray.
Yeah. The pain ray, which sounds like at once a fantastic, you know, sci-fi idea, you know, and also a terrifying one because it's, I mean, the pain ray, because on one level you hear it and you're like, it brings to mind this sort of like clean, like electronic, you're not shooting people in the face with rubber bullets. You're just like making them, you know, maybe feel a little discomfort and then, you know, as a corrective action, kind of like a, you know, like when you have to put like a shock collar on a dog, where you're, which, you know, may not be that humane in some interpretations, but for the most part, you're not like whipping the dog with a bullwhip or something. So like on that level, yeah, I can see that, you know, making sense. But on the other level, like, it's like you're pointing a ray gun at somebody and making them like cringe in pain. It's about as horrible as any kind of pain infliction method that we've ever had.
Yeah. And to be more specific about it, it's actually a beam of 64 gigahertz radio waves, and it can cover a person's entire body. And it can cause agonizing pain as it heats water and fat molecules beneath the skin surface.
So it's like being microwaved, sort of?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And supposedly it's only in 3-second increments. Mm-hmm. And so the Department of Defense, who created this, and actually over a 2-decade period, they claim that the person's not burned because of the shallow penetration in the short time span and the low energy levels employed.
But then again, this also implies that the person using the weapon is following a set of guidelines or rules, right?
Right, right. Yeah. That always comes down to user error, right?
Yeah, because it's like tasers. In theory, a taser is a far more humane method of administering a corrective measure against somebody. But if you're misusing it, if you're just shooting people in the face with a taser at the drop of a hat instead of, say, employing other policing techniques such as, you know, verbal communication, then that's not an ideal situation. So
right. And it's interesting that you call it a taser because it really is like the Uber taser. Mm-hmm. I mean, the beam can hit someone up to a third of a mile away.
Whoa.
And they're only relieved of the pain when they move out of the way. So this was really something that that the Department of Defense wanted to use in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they couldn't clear the legal hurdles. And then they actually had it in Afghanistan, but they removed it really without any explanation. And they claimed that they had never used it on anyone there. So right away, you can already see like, maybe this is not perhaps the best idea, although it was made as a non-lethal weapon to have crowd control without killing anyone. I mean, that was the point, right? So in a sense, it's more humane.
Of course, we can't say non-lethal anymore, right? And the new preferred term is less lethal.
Yeah, you're right, less lethal. And I guess that comes down to user error, right? Like, okay, it's supposed to be spurted out in the 3-second increments, but who's to say that you couldn't continue to do those 3 seconds over and over again?
Yeah. Because I've long found like the quote less lethal weapons are often sometimes the more horrific seeming if used wrong. Because like I think of like you'd see those guns that like shoot a big wad of paste, you know, or some sort of goo, and the idea is you like stick somebody to in place with it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like every time I would see that, all I could imagine is somebody being like shot in the face with it and suffocating. And it was like that just seems like a horrific weapon. You know, if used improperly, like every weapon is eventually used.
Right, right. And actually, that's why they started saying less lethal, because, say, rubber bullets, I mean, at close range, those can kill.
Yeah.
Which brings us to this rifle, which is called a less lethal rifle, which, again, you know, rifle, less lethal, okay.
Yeah. This is the variable velocity rifle?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lund Technologies makes it. And those folks are also responsible for the Tickle Me Elmo. I'm not kidding.
So they were warming up to this with first, we'll develop the Tickle Me Elmo. And then the next logical leap is, a rifle.
Right, right. How do we use combustion technology now?
Yeah.
Now that we've mastered Tickle Me Elmo. But this is the less part of the gun. Is that it uses an explosive gas mixture in the chamber behind the projectile, say like a rubber bullet, rather than a conventional propellant powder like gunpowder.
Okay. So you get less like a muzzle flash kind of a situation.
Well, yeah, and it allows you to actually calibrate the amount of pressure that you'd like. And it does that in tandem with a laser range finder that, that measures the distance of the target and the gun. So then it can sit there and say, oh, okay, that person's 100 feet away. I'm going to, you know, put in the chamber this amount of explosion so that it doesn't actually kill the person.
Right. So, yeah, if they're close range, it kind of nerfs them to a certain respect, at least, you know,
right,
ballistically speaking.
A very painful nerf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're, farther away, because it's kind of like rifles. You know, anytime you hear about, like, people firing off rifles that have, like, just tend to have just tremendously long range, and you're like, are you really sure that there's nothing, you know, within this distance? But yeah, if it's like a shorter, the variable range, it'll, in theory, only have as much punch as it needs to
hit
the target.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, in theory, it sounds good, right?
Yeah,
but
in theory.
Then there's the whole user error, and then there's the whole fact that the Pentagon laid out some cash for the prototype here, and they requested that there was actual shoot-to-kill option. So they can override the non-lethal part of it and switch over to, dead.
That's that. And then you get into sort of lazy policing, lazy, soldiering kind of situation where it's like, well, I'd rather just, shoot to kill. So I'll just, switch the trigger.
Right. Or if you're in the thick of things and you have a ton of stress and confusion and chaos going on, maybe you would need to switch over to the shoot to kill option, but it's, we're humans and that's a tremendous amount of pressure to be under. And yes, if the purpose is to disperse the crowd, then you do have this rifle to do so. But yeah, the sort of decisions that happen in that split second, you just never know. So,
and it's difficult to even like judge that, having never been in a combat situation, if you're in a situation, if suddenly it's like, should I set this to lethal or nerf? And, my life is at stake, or the lives of innocent civilians, or, the people I'm fighting with.
Yeah. And what I think is interesting about both of these technologies, the beam and the rifle, is that clearly there's a need for something to allow for crowd control, particularly if you're in Afghanistan or Iraq. But, you have to, probably weigh we want to have the hearts and minds of people against we need some sort of force to control the crowd situation.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder, particularly with the beam, if that's one of the reasons why it didn't necessarily make it through there.
Also, I hope that it didn't actually have the name Pain Ray, because that's just, shoddy, marketing. It's like, hey, we got this great thing. It's called the Pain Ray. And, it's a totally humane way. It's like, whoa, it sounds kind of creepy. Can't you call it something like, variable velocity rifle? That sounds.
The please stand back rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and actually that rifle is nicknamed the Big Hurt.
The Big Hurt. Okay.
Yeah. Which, again, come on, guys. Marketing.
Yeah. Or maybe, it's like it needs a separate title for the guys using it. So they'll feel like they're not going out there like, all right, guys, if these guys get out of hand, you'll need to pull out your discomfort wand on them. Cause that, how can you confidently stride out into battle or to face a crowd?
Right. Okay. I just imagine someone with like a little wizard's cloak on with their wand. Which would seem much more benevolent, I suppose. But I was thinking about this too, is, if it were to be put in use, both of those technologies, would it really help the situation? And the reason I ask that is because I'm thinking about whether or not people could become desensitized to that sort of pain. There was an article published in 1953 by a Harvard anesthesiologist, and he was basically saying that the soldiers wounded in battle complained a lot less than those who had similar pains or injuries in a civilian hospital. And the idea is that the wound was less important in the face of survival, and that and there's also sort of an honorable connotation to it. So it sort of made me wonder if you had this constant barrage of pain-inducing beams, would it become a badge of honor to undergo something like that? And also, would your own endorphins kick in and block the pain?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you see, these like riot. Images from around the world where it'll be like, the riot guards lined up and there'll be some guy manning up or berserking, out and just, running at them or, throwing a rock. or some sort of like a, you know, flaming stick or something. And yeah, it's like, would a slight discomfort beam really work in that situation? Or,
right. Know? Right. And not that humans are rats, but there is one study, that was conducted jointly by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and UCLA, and they found that rats don't respond to pain, stimuli in the presence of a predator or in an environment that provokes fear. So if there's an imminent danger, it actually suppresses the experience of pain through endogenous opioids. So, I mean, you know, again, we're not rats, but.
Yeah.
You have to sort of look at that correlation and say, is it the same thing that when you have a fear response that you do have these endorphins going through your body, and particularly in something like that where you're in danger. We already know this with athletes who, not necessarily that they're in danger, but they're performing at these crazy high levels. And when they become injured, the dopamines kick in and they're able to slog through the race and limp off the field or the track or what have you. And experience that pain later.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's that definitely raises a lot of questions about less lethal, weapons, or just sort of like the idea of, you know, using pain as a corrective measure in high intensity, confrontations.
Yeah.
Like maybe like feelings of ickiness are better. Like if you.
Shame and ickiness.
Yeah. Like if you were to sort of like, you know, sort of like a Ghostbusters 2 slime gun, you know, where you sort of like hose everybody down in that. Like it doesn't, not enough pressure to like, you know, knock people down or, you know, actually inflict physical pain, but suddenly everybody just feels kind of gross and they just want to go home and take a shower.
Right. I mean, and there are other alternatives. There's like the long range acoustic signals that are, you know, that horrible shrieking, piercing sound that will disperse a crowd for certain. I think that one of the concerns though, particularly with the beam, is that there's a company called Raytheon, which is conducting a case study in a California detention center, and they're using that beam on prisoners there, which is sort of like, whoa. Okay. And of course, the ACLU has stepped in to say, well, you know, we might have some civil rights issues here, guys.
Yeah, because it's an auditory pain kind of ray, basically. It's
right.
Like, we're going to blast you with physically painful noise.
Yeah. And I get it. Again, it's another situation when you have a prison riot. Mm-hmm. The stakes are really high. You do want something there to help you manage the situation.
Yeah.
But again, the potential for misuse is pretty high.
Yeah.
I got to say. You know, I'm not Johnny Cash here, like doing a concert for the prisoners. I get that, you know, that there are certain things going on there that you need to try to control, but it does seem to me a little bit of a suspicious.
Yeah, it comes down
situation.
To sort of the, like, flipping a button to inflict pain versus, like, beating somebody with a baton. Like, both are in a way, both are equally inhumane.
Yeah.
But one is far easier. And, I don't know. You get into a lot of philosophical questions when it comes down to how do you choose to inflict pain on people, and ultimately how do you get around doing it to begin with?
Right, and then I guess to your point, too, you start to objectify the person even more.
Yeah,
yeah. And does that make the situation better or worse? These are actual philosophical questions, but nonetheless,
yeah,
you got to ask them. But, you know, then you look at the flip side and, you know, out of the military and all out of all the warfare, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan, you have a lot of soldiers returning and they've got, horrible injuries and major amounts of chronic pain. And that's a real problem too. So you have pain on the other side here. And I guess the flip side of that would be, how do you lessen pain?
Yeah.
I mean, we've figured out how to inflict it. But is there a good, viable way to deal with pain in the best of the future sense, you know, the abilities that we have?
Yeah, because, I mean, basically, I mean, if we can prevent pain, you know, or lessen it to some degree, I mean, that helps just in the treatment of the core problems, you know?
Right.
Like you know, nobody should have to live with chronic pain, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the key.
And, of course, we've got drugs to help with it, but the problem with that is that they're pretty addictive.
Yeah, because a drug is generally doing more than just removing the pain. It also has an opiate effect to it,
right?
And especially in cases where it's, you know, stuff like Oxycontin,
yeah,
classic morphine, situation, all that stuff.
Right. So it's removing the pain. It's blocking the pain, but it's also providing a high.
Yeah.
Which, you know, puts your body in that loop and gets all your receptors all lined up to say, hey, more, more.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that there's a team of doctors who actually see the future of wartime pain control, in a new form of anesthesia called continuous peripheral nerve block. And it takes a more targeted approach by switching off only the pain signals coming from the injured limb. So it leaves the patient's vital signs intact and the cortical functions unimpaired. And the good news with that is that, you know, you can help treat the source of the pain without creating that loop of addiction.
Yeah. Or just my understanding is also you're not turning off that limb. So it's not like, yeah, oh, I can't feel my leg anymore because I don't want my knee to hurt. It's more targeted than that.
Yeah, which has got to help when you're recuperating from an injury,
mm-hmm,
or dealing with chronic pain like that. But if you think about it, it's sort of like an elementary form of an epidural block. It's just much more targeted. Of course, in an epidural, you know, you can't feel your legs or anything. But
yeah.
or so people say. But this is a lot smarter choice. And you know, of course, warfare is never going to go away. So being able to use something like this is really great for soldiers who are returning.
Well, warfare might go away. Let's not completely rule it out.
Oh boy, I'm feeling like a pessimist this morning.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
But these blocks are actually made possible by this invention of small microprocessor-controlled pumps. So they bathe nerves in these non-addictive drugs. And that's what blocks the transmission of pain signals. And the cool thing about this is that the pumps can also be used after they're treated in the hospital. So they can use this for a couple of weeks, administer the pump themselves, and be able to control the pain.
Oh, cool. But without self-administering an opiate effect.
Exactly.
Which would, generally not be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the same category, we've got another sort of erasing pain technology.
Yeah, this is the one that I've seen in a couple of different articles. They make the inevitable comparison to the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. What's it, Charlie Kaufman's screenplay?
Yeah. Jim Carrey.
Yeah. About the whole, like, oh, I have a painful memory, go in and erase that memory so I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Right, not to be tortured by this horrible breakup or this awful thing that happened. And they don't necessarily erase specific memories, though. Is this right with this technology?
Yeah, this technology is not quite as far-fetched and surgical. It's it comes from researchers at the University of Toronto, Seoul, Korea, and Bristol.
Shout out Bristol.
and it's specifically designed for chronic pain. And we're talking generally like, you know, high levels of chronic pain, like not just a list, I'd rather sleep in, but, oh, I need to take something so I can get out of bed, you know, in the morning. That's generally what they're talking about here. Not like stubbed toes or even sort of marginally sore backs, specifically, you know, intense pain.
Yeah.
And also people who have malfunctioning, pathways in their synapses, which cause them to re-experience the pain due to abnormal persistence of their mental record of that pain.
Okay.
So it is kind of tied. It's kind of tied into the memory of the pain, you know.
Okay.
But not like it's not like an emotional thing like in the movie. But they do this by inhibiting a molecule called PKM zeta, and this is a molecule involved in the storage of memories that reside in a part of the brain involved in the perception of pain. So they can successfully eliminate the painful memory at the heart of some kinds of neuropathic pain. And so far, apparently, the tests have worked on mice.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's sort of, and what I thought was interesting about this is it's jamming that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically saying, okay, you can't, the number of receptors get reduced, and then the memories of that disappear.
Yeah.
And that's what they've seen in the mice, at least.
Yeah.
So I guess that begs the question of they can develop drugs to inhibit painful memories by targeting this molecule. But what about other forms of memory or, you know, what does that do to the mice, you know, the memories that they have or how their brain functions?
Yeah. Cause again, we go back to like the purpose of pain and, you know, the meaning of pain. And it has, as much as we're like, oh, you know, I wish I, you know, wouldn't have to suffer. It's like, it's a vital part of who we are. Like to steal a quick quote from William Faulkner, he said, given the choice between the experience of pain and nothing, I would choose pain. Or, C.S. Lewis had a bit, and of course he wrote The Problem of Pain. And, this has more of a theological, standpoint, but he says, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscious, but shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. So, I mean, you get into Buddhism too, where it's, you know, pain, you know, suffering is a part of who we are. And,
right.
And you can't have, if you just seek out pleasure, you're gonna get more pain. You gotta have that balance.
So you can't have one without the other.
Yeah. It's just part of the feedback system, you know?
Right.
It's kind of, you know, it's kind of like when they're coming up with, trying to come up with robots that can move and interact in a social environment. You kind of have to come up with like a kind of a pain sensation. You have to sort of create it, for robots to a certain extent, or at least a machine version of pain.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't think about that. That's like, it's almost like the robots have the inability, like the congenital inability to feel pain.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they, if we didn't program that, then they might smush us into little pieces.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's again, it just comes down to, am I touching a pan that's too hot?
Mm-hmm.
Should I be wearing, you know, a glove? Oh, did I burn my finger and I need to have correct, you know, do something? And then also just like behavior stuff, you know, you have that really painful mistake, be it a physical pain or emotional pain. And, that tends to be something you don't do again. You know,
it's, right.
you learn from that pain. So yeah, what if we end up, you know, erasing or lessening pains that are shaping who we are? Like what happens then? We get into some weird, ground there, potentially.
No, it's an interesting proposition. Yeah. You're right. I mean, I guess the question is, could you experience happiness at all?
Yeah.
If you didn't know the difference.
Because we've all encountered those people who seem happy all the time and they're just boring, you know?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
That's when I just pinch them.
Yeah.
And I say,
like,
hey.
There, learn from that.
Yeah. All right. I think we've covered the future of pain as much as we can with this topic. I mean, this topic is fascinating and there's so many different ways we can go with it. But yeah. So next time you see someone who's happy, pinch them.
Yeah. And then quiz them on what they've learned. So, hey, we have a little listener mail here.
Let's see. What do we have?
Well, let's see. All right. We have some listener mail from Laverne. And they write, hey, guys, my name is Laverne. And that's it. No, there's more. I was just listening to your show about vertical living, and the scenario, as you described it, would be logically impossible. The reason I say that is because if you really lived on, say, the 200th floor of that building, and all the work was done by robots, I agree that would be great. But if all the work is done by robots, I wish you would explain to me how you're going to learn to, you're going to be able to earn money, to buy food, to keep yourself alive. Even if it's grown in the building, there's still costs involved in growing it, and there is no way that it would be free. And they go on to expand on this a little more and then say, so my prediction is it will never happen, or if it does, then it will be the start of the end of civilization. Because if money drives innovation, innovation will stop, and in another century, the robots will be worn out, and no one would have the skills to survive. But that's just the theory of a stone worker stuck in my shop listening to podcasts while working. So if you disagree with me, please let me know. This listener raises some important, questions. Because, yeah, if we find ourselves in a situation where we hand over an increasingly large slice of our lives to machines, and you get into the basic problem of utopia. And,
Yeah, and actually, you and I sort of had this outside conversation about this.
Yeah.
Because I remember we were talking, I think you were making me feel better about the technological singularity. And I think you were saying, like, that the best case scenario would be that we don't exchange money anymore. There is no need for money.
Yeah. You'd have to, it would, you know, be more of like just a complete, like, socialist, kind of situation. I always keep coming back to the Culture series by Ian M. Banks, where he describes a future culture where humans basically do what they want and lead this anarchist hedonist lifestyle, and the robots are more or less their caretakers that take care of everything.
Right.
And the way he doesn't, you know, like he lays it out in in a way where you get a sense of loss. There's something that's missing, but from humanity. But then it's also, people are still doing what they want and they're, engaging in their hobbies, et cetera. So it's, problematic, and thought provoking, But it also ties really into this podcast, like the whole idea of pain, like utopia.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that too. Are they they're being served by the robots where they're probably going around pinching each other?
Yeah.
Just to say, remember?
Yeah, do they just turn it, it basically turns into any of the other Wes Anderson movies. Like I'm thinking about the Darjeeling Limited, where it just, where there's not an actual father figure and it's just about three, like rich privileged guys that are
brothers.
Horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, life becomes that film as opposed to The Life Aquatic.
Wow.
I guess. That's not my favorite. Life Aquatic, I love.
I wasn't
a big fan of Darjeeling Limited.
No, me too. But there's some interesting scenes. Actually, that opening mini movie is pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. That was beautifully shot, as I recall. But anyway, Laverne, thanks for the thoughts. I think that's all thought-provoking stuff.
Very thought-provoking. Thank you.
And on a much smaller email we received from one Nick. And Nick wrote in to say, listen to your podcast, Life on the 500th Floor, last night. And after hearing about your interest, he's talking about me, in battles on sky bridges, I threw this together in MS Paint. Hope you like it. I'll hold it up to the microphone, but you can't really hear it. But he drew an awesome MS Paint image of stick figures fighting on a sky bridge. So,
yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. You need to post it on our Facebook page.
I should, yes. When this comes out, I'll try and remember to post it because it's exactly like it appeared in my brain.
you drop right into his brain there, Nick.
Yep. So there you have it. If you want to check out this image that we're talking about, or engage with us in the social medias, then you can come by our Twitter or Facebook pages. We're Blow the Mind on both of those.
You can also drop us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.